Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions expressed on Wolf Dog Radio by our guests and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of the production team of the hosts of Wolf Dog Radio. We are open to your ideas for future radio programs. Please feel free to email us with questions or comments at questions@wolfdogradio.com. Greetings and salutations. I'm Kat Wolfdancer.
And I'm Crystal Ward.
And welcome to Wolf Dog Radio. On this episode of Wolf Dog Radio, we are very excited to bring you Nicole Wild. Nicole has written some of the best and first Wolf Dog owner-specific books. Her publishing company, Phantom Publishing, at www.nicolewilde.com, has a plethora, 10 of terrific dog training books. You got to check out her site. She's a trainer and one of the first trainers to publicly advocate positive wolf dog training for her gentle guidance dog training business in Southern California. She specializes in behavioral issues, is an international author, and a lecturer. She's a columnist for Modern Dog Magazine, blogs for Huffington Post, and as well as she has her own blog, Wild About Dogs. You can catch it back at the NicoleWild.com site. She is also an artist with a camera and donates much of her time photographing shelter dogs in order to increase their chances of adoption. Her digital artist site is www.photomagicalart.com, and you have got to see The Road Home. It will touch you like few artists can.
I'm so thrilled to have Nicole on the show. She's a very big inspiration, not only in the wolf dog community, but in the canine community altogether, bringing amazing art together along with her talented writing skills as well. I cannot wait for the interview to begin. And as a special treat for our listeners, Miss Wild is offering a 10% discount to Wolf Dog Radio listeners by using discount code BF0911. Again, that is BF0911 when ordering her wolf dog books and DVDs by visiting and ordering from her website, NicoleWild.com. We will be right back after these words from Natasha Woodall with Texas Wolf Dog Project.
Hello, this is Natasha Woodall, Vice President of Texas Wolf Dog Project and Shelter. We are an all-volunteer and donation-based 501c3 rescue and adoption facility dedicated to saving as many adoptable wolf dogs and northern breed dogs in the state of Texas as well as surrounding areas. This is based off of available foster homes, suitable adoptive homes, and, of course, financial resources for veterinary care. We support responsible ownership and public education, as well as promoting education for other rescue groups, shelters, and animal control facilities concerning proper wolf dog identification, evaluation, and care. For more information on adoption, events, volunteer work, and how to donate, please visit our website at www.texaswolfdogproject.org or email us at info@texaswolfdogproject.org or visit us on Facebook. Thank you.
This is Ian Dunbar, and you are listening to Wolf Dog Radio.
Well, hi, Nicole. It's been a long while, and I am so excited to hear from you again. Let's just jump into the interview. The first question I have for you, I have heard you say again and again, a candle loses nothing by lighting another candle. And I have always loved this thinking. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, that's a great quotation. It was actually by a priest named James Keller, and the meaning of it basically is that it doesn't cost you anything to help somebody else, and that's just sort of been a life philosophy with me, whether it has to do with writing or, you know, just the way you interact with people in everyday life. And as far as wolf dogs, you know, you've been around the wolf dog world a long time, Kat. And when this all started for me, before I ever wrote any of the wolf dog books, there was, God, I sound like I'm so old. Back in my day, before Facebook, there was a time before Facebook existed. It's kind of strange. But anyway, back in the day, there were a bunch of us on sort of a discussion group, you know, on the internet, and it was all about wolf dogs, and people would come on, you know, sort of people who were new to wolf dogs, and they would ask all kinds of questions, and a bunch of us would try to answer them. And I started getting a lot of emails sent to me asking for advice, and I was happy to do that because, again, it costs you nothing, right, to help somebody else. But it eventually became where I was spending, you know, upwards of 2 and 3 hours a day answering these emails, and it was starting to get a little unwieldy. And so I thought, well, you know, there's not really much out there as far as educational materials for people, and why don't we, us people who are sort of the regulars on this discussion group, why don't we all get together and we can all write sort of an educational guide, and, you know, we can each write a different chapter, and, you know, this way when somebody comes in and they need help, we can say, here, you know, we'll give you a little bit of an answer, but also here's this guide, and, you know, free of charge, just take it. And everybody said, wow, that's a great idea. Let us know when it's done. So nobody really wanted to do the work, and I thought, well, fine, I'll just write an actual book, you know. So I, you know, wrote the Living with Wolf Dogs book, and then people wanted another one, so the Wolf Dogs A to Z came out. But the whole point is I still spend time, you know, answering questions and emails and everything else, because I do think that, you know, especially with wolf dogs being such a tricky subject, you know, where there's a lot of misinformation out there, I think that the people who really do have solid information, it costs you nothing to help other people, you know, and to lend a hand and to spread education. So it's really the best thing for everybody.
I agree. I know that those books that you just referenced were just, they were definitive for me. They were really excellent resource material, and I still have mine.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, so, there's just not a lot out there, unfortunately, and there, like I said, there's so much misinformation out there that it's difficult for people to know, you know, how to be responsible.
Right. Would you give us a very brief rundown of your history with wolf dogs, how you came to be involved with them, and what drew you to them?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's not like as a kid I just went, oh, I just want to grow up and work with wolves one day. You know, it just wasn't on my radar. I was always an animal lover, absolutely. I always had dogs, and I liked wolves, of course. But it wasn't really until I grew up in New York, in Brooklyn, and I moved out to L.A. From Brooklyn to Hollywood. It was sort of a very lateral move. It wasn't all that different. But I moved out here in 87. And I met my husband, and we had a dog. I met my husband, and we had a dog. Not I met my husband, and we had a child. I met my husband, and very soon after, we had a German Shepherd. And her name was Soko. And I was actually looking for a companion for her. And I saw an ad in the paper about wolf hybrid puppies. And I thought, oh, okay, you know, that's interesting, and I always liked things that were a little different, and I thought, let's just go check it out. And so we drove up there, and where we were going was actually a rescue center, and the person who ran the rescue did not normally have puppies. She was very responsible. She spayed and neutered, but this happened to be a bunch of puppies that had come in to the rescue, and they were, I think, husky wolf pups, and we did not end up getting a puppy, but I did end up becoming good friends with her, and I started out volunteering for the rescue, and it was a very small thing as far as, like, staff or volunteers. It was basically just me and her, and we were, you know, shoveling pea gravel and building, taking, you know, 9-gauge chain link panels up a hill and all of this stuff to build enclosures, and I really ended up going from becoming a volunteer to becoming sort of her rescue partner and executive director, if you will, of the rescue, which was kind of like head pooper scooper. And that was Villalobos. My old rescue partner's name is Tia. And eventually that turned into a pit bull rescue. But back in the day, it was actually all about, you know, the wolves and the wolf hybrids. And so we had about 40 up there. And basically I got obsessed with, like, wolves and wolf hybrids. And my poor husband got dragged all over hell and back. I mean, I would be, you know, going to do, because I teach seminars also about dog behavior, and I would be going somewhere to do a seminar, and he'd come with me, and I'd say, you know, there's this guy who has a wolf dog rescue that's really not far from there. So we'd have to spend an extra day and go visit, you know, so-and-so's wolf dog rescue. And I kind of did that to the poor guy all over the country. And, yeah. But that's kind of how I got involved. You know, I kind of got thrown in the deep end. I knew a lot about dog behavior previous to that. And, you know, I've done training and worked with the city shelters and so forth, which is a crash course all by itself. But, you know, just being up there with 40 animals who were anywhere from, you know, very sort of doggy. We had a few that were doggier, that it were sort of low-content wolf dogs, all the way up to pure wolves. Or as they were known, what was it, 98%?
Yeah, wink, wink.
Yeah, at the time, yes. So, yeah, we had about 40 of them, and most of them were actually high content and or you know, some pure wolves. So, yeah, I learned a lot about them there. And then,
yeah, that's
know,
one way.
Yeah, and, you know, when you work with a rescue, what happens? You end up bringing home animals from the rescue, so... I guess you're probably going to ask me about that in a little bit, but yes, I ended up bringing home a couple. So the education continued.
I bet. So for our gentle listeners and those who are going to be listening in the future, what should they know about getting a wolf dog?
Oh, gosh. Read the books. That's one
yeah.
thing. Because everything I know about it's in there. But I will say the first thing, because I know your listeners are sort of all over the place geographically, the first thing is find out what the laws are in your area. Because, you know, I've had a lot of people who have contacted me and said, well, you know, I'm thinking about getting a wolf dog, and I'm not really sure about this and that. And I ask them where they live, and it's in a place that they're just highly illegal. And you don't want to start off on that foot, because you're going to spend the rest of your life worrying about whether your animal's going to be confiscated or euthanized. So I would find out the legalities in your area first, which can be a little bit tricky. You know, sometimes from county to county they're different. Sometimes the state law is different than another law, than the city law. So do your research. Also, let's assume that they are legal in your area. You've got to have proper containment. That's huge, absolutely huge. You know, whether you get a low-content, you know, wolf dogs are normally mixed with, what, Malamutes, Huskies, you know, northern breeds, sometimes Shepherds. And even a Siberian Husky, a purebred Siberian Husky, can go over a six-foot fence like it's absolutely nothing. And I have seen people who have had high-content wolf hybrids who are going over four-foot fences because they thought a four-foot fence was going to keep the dog in. So not... Definitely you need fencing and you need containment and you need to know that they are absolutely escape artists. They will dig under, they will jump and kind of cling on and climb over, and sometimes they'll just clear the fence altogether. So proper containment, absolutely. I also think that you've got to really be prepared for an animal that is really not going to be like, you know, your golden retriever. You know, a lot of people, you know, if they just think it's unique and it's different, and like I totally understand the attraction there, but this is not a normal dog, especially if you get a high content wolf dog, and you're going to need to know that they totally have different behaviors, that you can probably say goodbye to vacations if you end up with a bunch of them. You really need to know that you have to have patience. They're going to require training. They may have issues with being a little bit skittish, especially if they're higher content. You know, it's a little different on my part because the ones who came to live with me were already adults. They came from the rescue. As I said, nobody bred anything at the rescue. They were all, you know, rescued and spayed and neutered. So when I got the guys who came here, let's see, we had Phantom, Hayoka, and Sequoia. Phantom and Hayoka were male, and Sequoia was the female. And the boys were probably 3 or 4 years old when they got here already. And Sequoia, who was sort of a lower content mixed with Samoyed, was about 6. And so I did not have the opportunity to, you know, do all the things that you do with a puppy. In, you know, even with a regular dog, I mean, you're going to do lots of socialization and carefully, of course, and training and handling and so forth. And with a wolf dog, you know, some of those things, especially if you are rescuing and you didn't, which I think is a great thing, by the way, I would encourage rescue, but if you are doing all those things, you've really just got to know that you might be in it for the long haul as far as trying to change behaviors. And you've got to have patience, you know, and you're going to need to do a lot of gentle, positive training with them. So those are just a couple of the things to consider.
Yeah, just the brief beginnings of them.
Yeah, exactly.
In working with wolves and wolf dogs, dogs, basically shelter dogs, any of canines, can you explain to our listeners the similarities between the two?
Well, I've worked with an awful lot of shelter dogs, and I still, well, now I volunteer doing photography for shelter dogs and so forth, but I will say I think that they all have a basic need for affection. You know, they're all social pack animals. It's in their DNA. And although you might find that the higher content wolf dogs are, you know, a little bit more wary of people, I really honestly think that dogs want affection and they want attention and they, for the most part, do enjoy being handled and petted and so forth. I just think that that whole, you know, people talk about how dogs want to please you. You know, I think that they want to please you because it goes better for them when you're happy, you know. I don't think they're sitting home going, making lists, going, how can we make her happy today, you know. I don't think they really care. But I do think that with working with dogs and having trained so many dogs, you know, and wolves and wolf dogs, training them is a little different. You know, the behavioral modification is definitely different. They are the same in that they are trainable, you know, and that you can absolutely have a very deep, meaningful bond and social relationship with them. I certainly did with all of mine. They were like my kids. So in those ways, yes, absolutely the same. Trainable, bonding, affection, all that stuff. But with the wolf dogs, especially the higher content ones, they are not going to be trained to the same degree of reliability that a dog is going to, most likely. I mean, they really need reasons to do things, and they're not going to sit there and do 10 repetitions of something. After the second one, they're going to go, what's your point? You know? Mm-hmm. So they absolutely can be trained in places like Wolf Park in Indiana, do absolutely amazing, wonderful work with, you know, training and socialization and all of that good stuff. But, again, it's not going to be the same as working with a dog exactly.
So the differences are also what?
Well, the differences are definitely, like I said, you know, their sort of tractability, I guess is the right word, because, you know, dogs are a lot more tractable. Dogs are, you know, you take a puppy and you're like, sit and down and this and that, and it's one thing, or even an adult dog. But with a wolf dog, it's just a little more challenging on the training. They are extremely intelligent. They are definitely good learners. But it could be tricky. You know, interestingly, I am a very gentle, positive trainer, whether it's dogs or wolves or any kind of animal. But and I do believe in cooperating with the animal, not coercing the animal. And especially, I just want to put this out there because I know people are listening, that if your background is in working with dogs where you're training with, like, choke chains and jerking them and all that, forget it. Throw that, or God forbid, like shock collars, throw that all out the window. because these are not animals that you're going to want to train that way. I don't personally
right.
think you should even be training a dog that way. But, you know, you've got to really be patient, and you've got to really, you know, you have to respect them. I mean, that's really the bottom line, honestly, of all of my success working with wolves and wolf dogs. And I really have had a really, I've been lucky, you know. I've really had great relationships with all the wolves at the rescue and the wolf dogs that I've encountered. And it's because I do respect them, and I don't push anything on them. And so you've got to get really good at sort of reading canine body language. Wolf dogs in particular, and certainly wolves, are very fast in their reflexes. They are actually fairly easy to read if you take the time to learn about it. And so body language is definitely something you'll want to know a lot about if you're going to consider having a wolf dog. So, I'm sorry, getting back to your original question, because I've gone off on a tangent here. You were asking about what are sort of the differences. So, yeah, I would say the differences are definitely in the tractability of them as far as training and so forth, and just in their behavior in general. I mean, look, dogs, you know, wolves are not dogs. So I think anybody who's really seriously thinking about, you know, getting a wolf dog, you want to know about things like prey drive, for example, you know, whereas a little squeaky chihuahua might not be a problem for your golden retriever. Maybe for your high-content wolf dog, it might be. So,
right.
And that's not to say that there aren't high-content wolf dogs that don't play with little dogs, but I can also tell you there's an awful lot of them who have killed little dogs, and I know this because we used to get them at the rescue.
Right.
So yeah.
Do you happen to have a body language resource available for our listeners?
Well, you know, actually, I've got 10 books out. Two of them are about wolf dogs, and the rest are dog behaviors. And the one that is called Help for Your Fearful Dog, I have to tell you that book is one that a lot of wolf dog owners have gotten, because it, number one, it has a lot of stuff in it. There's a ton of, that's like an over, it's a doorstop is what it is. That book never started out to be that long, and it ended up being over 400 pages of all different kinds of fear issues. But it's got a ton of photos and information about body language, which is, again, crucial. And plus, there's a lot of wolf dogs that unfortunately have fear issues as well. So,
right.
Yeah. So yeah, Help for Your Fearful Dog definitely has that.
I'm going to have to, I don't know if I've got that one in my library, so I'm going to have to pick that one up. I'm
yeah,
always
they're all
been interested.
That, yeah, they're all on the NicoleWild.com site, all 10 of them. So.
Excellent. So I've read with interest your blog. I follow it a lot.
Good.
But you have a story on it called Annabelle, Oh Annabelle. And I came I came away with some thoughts that maybe this is one of the most important things that an animal needs to learn, since, you know, wolf dogs and wolves are hardwired just a little bit different. Have you found recall to be that much more difficult with them?
Well, yeah, you know that blog that you mentioned, that entry, the Annabelle, Oh Annabelle, that was written because I was sitting in the house one day, and my neighbor, who's across the road, you can hear everything in this little canyon that I live in, and his dog was Annabelle, and all I could hear was like, Annabelle, Annabelle, get over here, you know, and like 10 minutes it went on calling for Annabelle, who's probably running down the hillside going, la, 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 I don't hear you, who's Annabelle? And yeah, so the recall, whether you have a dog or a wolf dog, honest to God, that is one of the most important things you can ever teach. I will tell you that when we adopted, okay, I have two dogs now. I have Bodie and Sierra, which, as you know, if you follow my blog or my Facebook or anything, you've probably seen nauseating amounts of photos of them and stories about them and God knows what. In fact, it was just Sierra's anniversary of her gotcha day. We got her from a shelter out in the desert, actually, 7 years ago, where she had been brought in, by the way, 4 times before we adopted her, so nobody knew why. She was actually a great escape artist and had separation anxiety, as I discovered, but that's another thing. But, yeah, so when we brought Sierra home, because I knew, particularly because I knew she had been sort of an escape artist and had been brought in as a stray four times and all that, we already had 6-foot fencing, but and chain link, and I extended it to 8 feet with overhangs, like we're having a zoo here, you know, and because I just knew, I knew she was an escape artist, and she was a quote-unquote husky mix, you know. We don't really know what she is. All I know is when I was in the getting to know you area, the animal control officer walked by and went, "Oh, look, she's a miniature wolf." Yeah. So I brought her home and I started training her like the second day she was here for the recall. And there was a guy, the guy who came to fix our fencing, unbeknownst to me, had actually moved this little like wooden board that had been put in place to hide a hole in the fence. He had moved it when he was inspecting the fence. And so here it is, like 2 weeks after Sierra had come here and I had been working with her, I came home one day and she was gone. And I absolutely freaked out. I mean, did she get somewhere in the house? Did she somehow get behind the storage shed outside? Where was she? And she wasn't anywhere. And I was, like, in tears, you know, thinking, oh, my God, this dog's gone, you know. And I was on the phone with my husband, and I said, you know what, let me just walk outside the front door. And we live right up against the mountains, so you really can't even see sort of the next houses. You just walk outside, and there's, like, hills. And I just walked out on the front porch, and I started yelling, Sierra, come, you know, in that same, and I'm not saying it loud now because she's in the house, and she's going to come running if I do that, but I started saying it in that same voice that I had used all along for training her, the high, happy voice, and I actually pretended like she was on her way to me, so it wasn't just Sierra come. It was like, good girl, yay, keep coming, yay. And do you know that miracle of miracles, like 20 seconds later, she came flying over the hillside. So wherever she was, sort of over the mountains, she heard me calling and she came running because we had done so much work on that recall already. So yes, if you have a poodle, but if you have any kind of a wolf dog, absolutely work on that recall, work on it, work on it, work on it, because that is one of the most important things. And by the way, do not ever, when your dog comes to you, no matter how naughty your wolf dog's been, you know, running off or whatever, once they come to you, don't ever start saying, "Oh, bad dog, what did you do?" or any of that, because then what are you doing? You're punishing them for coming to you, right? So if they've gone off somewhere, call them to you, yay, good dog. And I don't care if you're going, good dog, I'm going to kill you if you ever do that again, you little piece of crap. I don't care. Make them sound happy. So, and give them a treat or five.
So tell me about Heyoka, the amount of patience and the willingness to accept him on his own terms. That's the way it's supposed to be. It was a very bittersweet read when I read it.
Yeah, you're going to make me weepy is what you're going to do, Kat.
Oh,
you're an evil
sorry.
Woman. Oh, gosh.
Evil wicked.
You are. Well, you know, so when I worked with the rescue, like I said, you end up bringing the animals home. And first what happened was Phantom, who was the large, pure wolf, the black with green eyes, he was an animal who I ended up with because he belonged to a guy who lived in a suburban area and had like 8 like wolves or wolf hybrids and should not have. And basically my rescue partner Tia at the time, you know, really she didn't want to take in more animals, which was understandable. But I had formed a bond with Phantom because we had both been trying to keep an eye on this guy because we knew it wasn't going to end well. And the animals, we were worried for them. So I had gone to visit him, and Phantom and I had immediately just had this, it was like, you know, your eyes lock across a crowded room, you know. And so this guy came out of his house, and there I am on the ground with Phantom, you know, giving him cuddles, and he was just like, that's weird. He's never let anybody touch him before. And I'm like, I don't know. We have a bond, you know. So long story short, I got Tia to take him in, and she didn't really want him. He was fearful. He was skittish, and she didn't really love the fearful, skittish ones. And at the time, I didn't have a house. I was renting a place with my husband, a house in the San Fernando Valley, and which is not like wolf friendly, you know. And I was driving an hour every day to the rescue, you know, to do the stuff up there. And so basically she said, I will take Phantom in, but you need to find a place to put him, which was fair enough and nice of her. And so we bought a house because we were looking for a house anyway. And so we found a house that had just like a little bit of, you know, property so that we could turn the horse stalls into a wolf pen. Because what else do you do with horse stalls, right? So we did that and we brought Phantom home. But as you know, you just can't have one wolf dog sort of or wolf by himself. And so there was another pair at the rescue, which was Heyoka and his pen mate, Sequoia. And as I said, Sequoia was sort of a low-content, a female Samoyed wolf mix. And then Heyoka was probably three-quarters wolf mixed with Malamute. And he was always very skittish, even up at the rescue. On the other side of that, Sequoia was, like, absolutely the most needy dog there. I would be, you know, scooping poop in a kennel across from her, and she would be up on her hind legs with her paws on the chain link, just plastered to it, going, oh, I need attention, you know. And so I knew that, you know, it's hard to pay attention to 40 animals, you know, when you're taking care of them. And so I thought, well, she's really the neediest one up there, and she could benefit the most from coming and having, you know, just more attention just on three animals. So I took her and Heyoka home, and as I said, he was extremely skittish. You know, it's funny because Tia's daughter, Tanya, who was young at the time, she was able to get near him and touch him, but really nobody else. And so they were with me for, oh, gosh, over 10 years. And I have to say, in all that time, I mean, I definitely made progress with him, but it was on his terms. It was always on his terms. For example, when I went down to the pen, because I was in there with them every day, I could put my hand kind of through the chain link posts before I opened the gate, and he would come up and let me kind of scratch him on the chest. But once I was in the pen with them, the only way I could really touch him is either if he came up to me, I could kind of, you know, let him kind of sniff my face and kind of rub up my hair and all that, or to put my hands on him. It would have to be a situation where Phantom, who would let me touch him, was sort of horizontally across, like standing across blocking me, and Heyoka was in back of him. So he felt like more comfortable that there was this buffer between us, and I was able to touch him that way, which is actually something I use with fearful dogs now, you know, to get them to be okay with people. Those wolves really taught me a ton about working with fearful dogs, you know, over the years. So Heyoka was, you know, he was an old soul. He was not, you know, whereas Phantom was sort of the goofy, bratty, really bratty, eternal teenager. Heyoka was really like a wise old soul, and he was definitely sort of the alpha of that little group, even though Sequoia kicked those boys' butts. But he was kind of like old and wise and in charge. And it was very sad that the only time I really, really got my hands on him to pet him was, you know, he got older and he had some medical issues and we had him on meds and this and that. And unfortunately, we did have to, you know, have him euthanized. And, you know, they sort of give the injection and they give you time with your animal before they kind of do the final stuff. And that was the only time I was ever really able to, you know, pet him the way I wanted to, which was very sad.
Aww.
But, you know, he had as good a life with us as he possibly could have had. So
certainly,
I take comfort in that.
Sometimes we have to realize that the best that we can do is the best that they will accept.
Yes, really well put. Exactly. And that's all about not pushing them, you know, and respecting their boundaries and gaining their trust, you know, and just kind of working with them.
They have taught me a whole lot. Working with wolf dogs has made me really appreciate canines a whole lot more than I did before, which is really surprising. I don't know why it's surprising, but it did. It was.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, it makes you appreciate how easy dogs are.
It really does.
You know? I mean, before I ever opened a dog training business, I was doing all the work with the wolves and the wolf dogs, and one day I turned around, you know, I was like teaching a wolf dog not to be mouthy, and I thought, you know, this is so stupid. I was like working, I don't know, an office job. I was like in the entertainment industry, and I thought, you know, my real love is working with the animals. Why am I doing this and then doing that separately? And yeah, or dogs are a lot easier.
Your photography is award-winning, with your top 10 awards for your photography from the 2006 International Animals Theme Online Art Exhibit. I'd love to hear about your photography passion.
Oh, thanks. That's cool. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I always loved photography, but until a couple of years ago, I never had anything but a point-and-shoot. So, you know, back in the film days. And so I got a digital camera, and I had to learn all that stuff, which it's funny because, I mean, I have a good eye. I've always had an eye for it, and I have a passion for it, but the technical stuff absolutely baffled me. And so I had kind of a struggle learning that. And my photography actually morphed into art, where what I do is I do two different things. One is I actually do photography, straight photography pretty much, for rescue groups. Because, again, you know, my heart is always going to be in rescuing animals and helping rescue animals in one way or another. So I work with, for example, a deaf dog rescue. Then there's another rescue here in town that takes in dogs from different shelters. And you know how it is when you're looking at photographs of dogs for adoption. If they don't look a certain way, people aren't going to want to adopt them. So I started out, you know, doing a lot of that, donating my time for that. And I started actually doing digital art, which is basically taking one or more of your photos and sort of compositing them together and enhancing them in Photoshop. And I really, you know, I've always been sort of a creative person, but I can't draw a straight line, and I certainly can't paint. And I always really wanted a way to express myself visually. And somehow the photography and the digital art really came together where, you know, my love for animals, because of course it's all about animals, why wouldn't it be, you know, that really played into it. And so I was able to combine that into sort of like these magical scenes between people and animals. And it's all about like magic and connection between people and animals, between animals and each other, and showing the real emotional life of animals. Because, you know, it's crazy to think, but there are people out there who still don't think that animals even have emotions. So, you know, I know nobody I'm talking to now, but you know what I'm saying. They're out there. So, yeah, that's kind of what my art's all about. And I have actually won a bunch of awards for the art stuff, which blew me away. I was kind of like, really? But, yeah, I love it. I had a very, very rough year in 2015. I had... It was a bad year. I had 3 deaths in the family, including both of my parents. I lost a friend of 25 years, and I almost lost Sierra. She had emergency surgery, and I almost lost her at the same time I was losing my mother. So it was a horrifically bad year, and I really needed to do something to keep my sanity. And the art really, honestly, got me through that year. It was sort of a saving grace. And pouring everything into, you know, the animal-related stuff in that way really helped, too. And it's cool because, you know, there's so many animal lovers who are like my Facebook friends and, you know, just kind of in my sphere, you know, who really relate to it. And I love that it touches people. I put a piece out recently called The Road Home. And
I love that.
Did you
see
that?
Oh, my gosh, it was gorgeous.
Thank you. You know what? I wasn't really even going to share that one with anybody because it was so intensely personal to me. You know, it's all about, you know, sort of my version of a rainbow bridge, I guess, you know, where it's sort of like the afterlife where you're walking through this archway and, wow, there's all these animals and the ones that you've lost. And I actually, it's all my own photographs. And I can't even begin to tell you how much work that piece was because there's a lot of different, you know, animals that I used in there. But the ones who are kind of off in the distance, like over the Rainbow Bridge, those are actually my animals. Those are, you know, Phantom and Heyoka and Sequoia are there, the three wolves or wolf dogs, and Mojo, who was my soul dog, and Soko, the German Shepherd that I mentioned. So it was intensely personal, but I decided to share it, you know, on my Facebook page. And, wow, I was really, really surprised. There were so many people who, I mean, it's always nice to get likes and, oh, good art, you know. I mean, all of that is great. But there were so many people who were really, really touched by it. I mean, just animal lovers who, you know, were saying things like, wow, this really got me weepy, and you know, I totally relate, and I hope this is what it's like. And, I mean, that to me is the whole point of art, you know, is that you touch people.
Right. I had just lost my America. He was in a very, very high content Arctic.
Aww.
And I guess it was like maybe a month, maybe 2 months after when I saw your piece. And, of course, you know, we all grieve in different ways, and I had been kind of stuffing it. And when I saw that piece, I just lost it. I just lost it. It was so beautiful, and I just really want. Everybody should see it. I mean, it's like you said, really, really touched. You can tell that you spent so much time on it. Anybody that's done any kind of digital work on like that, it's obvious how much manpower.
And that was a labor of love. You know, and I should say, if you want to see it, the website is, because it's not my regular website, I have a different thing for my art, which is photomagicalart.com. So, like the words photo and magical, photomagicalart.com. That's where all my stuff's at, you know. So, yeah, you can definitely see it up there. I'm just really glad that it touched you that way. And, you know, like I said, I think we can all relate. If we're animal lovers, you know, that's sort of a really... That touches a nerve with us.
It really does.
Yeah.
So here's kind of a more esoterical question. What do you think about the future of wolf dog ownership?
Ooh, that's a tough one. You know, it's weird. You know, you and I, Kat, have been in this for so long, and we've seen different sort of attempts at breed standards come and go. You know, and it's like every couple of years, it seems like somebody comes up with a new name.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this new breed. Have you heard about the such and such? You know, and you look at the pictures and you're going, okay, those are wolf dogs, right? So, and some of them will say that there's like wolf in the breeding way back when, and some of them don't sort of admit that there's any wolf in there, but it's clearly obvious if you look at them. I don't really know what the future of wolf dogs is. You know, I do know that the legalities are pretty much against them in a lot of places, at least in the United States, and except Nevada, where you can pretty much have anything, I guess. But what I would hope the future would be is that there's some sort of a standardization of, like, a breed, you know, or I don't know. You know, it's really hard because there's so many breeders out there, some good, some not so good, who sort of create their own registries. That's been going on forever. And they'll say, well, oh, yeah, you know, your wolf dog is registered with the such and such, and, you know, there's a standard of this and that. And, I mean, you know how many of them are totally inaccurate. So I would hope that what happens is, number one, that the representation of them becomes more accurate so that people know that, hey, look, I'm looking for sort of a mid-content wolf dog, that they would actually get a mid-content wolf dog and not even like a dog or a high content, you know. And I would hope that more education gets out there and less of the kind of fanciful, oh, I just really want an animal that's part wolf, you know, which, again, I totally understand. But I really want people to understand what they're getting into. And if there was some sort of standardization of the breed, at least people would know what they were getting. Right now, things are all over the place. You know, I've heard, and I hear it all, believe me, I've heard over the years of people mixing wolves with pit bulls. You know, I don't know if you remember, there was something going around the internet years ago. There was the poo wolf. It was like a poodle wolf mix.
Yeah.
That was crazy. Because really,
yeah,
you don't have to be any smarter.
Yeah, those are interesting looking animals.
Yeah, it was interesting. Interesting is a nice word for it. So, yes, I just think that there should be some standardization and there should be some education and there should be, you know, just more responsibility on the parts of owners because, you know, although there are absolutely some very, very good owners out there and I count them among my friends, you know, I've also seen a lot of people who are totally irresponsible, who don't have the containment, who, I mean, you know, working rescue, you see the worst side of it as well. So I would just push for education and standardization and responsibility. You know, I'm not for bans or people, you know, taking away people's animals or anything like that. I just don't want the animals to suffer in the end.
Right. Yes, absolutely. So do you happen to have any projects or seminars upcoming that you'd like to share with us?
I do, actually. Well, let's see. If you happen to be in California, in Southern California, or within flying distance of Southern California, I'm actually going to be doing a two-day seminar in Burbank, May 20th and 21st. And one day is a full day on helping fearful dogs. And that also has a lot, like the book does, on body language. There's a lot of photos, there's a lot of video and so forth, as well as, you know, information about helping specific fear issues. I actually get quite a lot of wolf hybrid people who come to those. And then I have the second day is two topics, which is separation anxiety as well as dog-dog play, which is really interesting. So that's the one in Burbank. I've got one up in Canada in June. And I've actually, I spoke last year at Wolf Park, which is in Indiana, for anybody who doesn't know, Battleground, Indiana. Wolf Park is an amazing place to visit. I encourage people to go and check it out if you can. And they've got a bunch of different packs. They do really good research and education there. And they actually, I did a seminar last year. I'm going back to do a seminar this year in the fall. And they actually now will allow people, if you come for a seminar, you can do 2 days of seminar, and then on the third day, you can actually go in with the wolves, something they never used to do, and the foxes, who, by the way, I love. So, yeah, so it's really cool. And you have to sign up kind of early for that because they do limit the amount of attendees who can do the going in with the wolves part. But last year it was awesome. You know, they took me and a bunch of the other people. I always stay for that day as well. And so we go in with the different sort of packs, and people get to go hands-on with the wolves, which is, you know, it's incredible all by itself.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so envious. Wolf Park is one place that's been on my bucket list for,
well. Oh, you have
well.
To go.
Since 1998,
come to the
I guess.
Seminars. So yeah, all of the info on my seminars is on the NicoleWild.com site, so you can find it all through that.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, this has been such a wonderful chat. Do you happen to have anything else that you'd like to chat with us about?
Well,
I'm so
not really, but
I
so appreciate them. You know, the good questions and sort of helping me to get that education out there, and it's always fun talking to you, Kat.
Ditto, right back at you, Nicole.
Aww.
Well, thank you so much. I wish the very, very best for you for this incoming new year. And,
oh, thank you. Same to you, and same to your listeners
all of us,
out there.
You bet. All of us at Wolf Dog Radio hope for the very best, and we really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And I will be right back after these messages.
I would love to discuss a couple of things that I have seen being the director of a sanctuary rescue organization in order to help the wolves and wolf dogs that we love so much. Every year at puppy season, the rescue groups cringe at all the postings of new litters and pending breedings because we know the results that historically follow. Folks who do not have the right animals and the right experience producing pups and selling to whoever comes across with the cash. That ends up with the number of animals needing rescue to increase. Now, I'm not against breeders, but with a capital B-U-T, I see a very big gap in the education of the owners. I think collectively, as a community, we should all be responsible for properly assisting new folks and inexperienced people with a good quality program of wolf dog ownership guidelines. Like, for instance, the first wolf dog, real wolf dog that you buy from a breeder, not a rescued animal, should not be the animal you choose to breed as he or she turns a year old. I'm someone who loves to learn. I've had, in my past, that thrill-seeking personality type. That's why firefighting appealed so much to me, and when I started that career, I had zero experience or knowledge. So at first, I joined a volunteer organization and started training and saw that, yes, in fact, I did have an interest to continue this as a full-time job. Then I put my applications in and began the process to get hired as a professional firefighter. Even after I was out of recruit training and working in the field, I started taking university-level courses in fire management, construction, and incident command. The learning on different levels was very important in addition to the experience out in the field of running calls and mitigating emergencies. The point being that different experiences and types of learning was necessary in order to become a well-rounded firefighter. And this is the same at what it takes to be a well-rounded, educated wolf dog owner. I think as a community, it would be a great team project to put together an educational, informational system that we could all utilize. Not only would it benefit the prospective owners for breeders to utilize, but it could help rescue groups with adopters. We need these animals to stay in quality homes with the right enrichment, whether they're bought or adopted, and also have a safety net from where they came from. So if it doesn't work out, we still know the owners were educated. It would be a great project to bring the community together in a team effort to help our animals. The connections made would be immense across the country. Another short point I would like to make continues into the realm of connections. The name of our organization is In Harmony with Nature, and it's reflective of our philosophies. People have gotten to a place that they have forgotten that the animals and nature are here as our teachers. We are connected and can learn so much by opening our awareness. When we forget and start to act as we are the ones who know, we get in trouble, and it will make a life experience much harder to deal with. If we keep this at the forefront of our thoughts, then we will find good in every situation and learn from it. Be a student of nature. Life is an experience, no matter whether you want to call it a good one or a bad one. It's your own perception. But the wolf or wolf dog teachers that we live with are really working hard to help you see it as a good experience if you're willing to open your awareness and that connection to all life in nature. It really is all about connectedness. We receive animals in rescue, and it does bring people together if you keep connectedness in mind as opposed to becoming the judgmental hater. We don't know the reasons an animal winds up with us, but it's a connection, and it could open the door to an amazing experience that you could never have imagined if all you thought was, oh, wow, this poor animal. Well, that poor animal is here to bring you some gifts if you will actually listen. And that's my tidbit in a nutshell from Kim Capes at In Harmony with Nature.
Hi, this is the littlest voice of Wolf Dogdom, and you're listening to Wolf Dog Radio.
Good evening. This is Greg Argent, and this is Wolf Dog Radio's In the News for today. We have three pieces tonight. The first, 14 endangered Mexican wolves were found dead in year 2016. This is from Associated Press, dated January 4th of this year. Pardon me. More than a dozen endangered Mexican gray wolves were killed in 2016, including two at the hands of wildlife officials who are capturing and collaring the animals as part of an annual survey of the struggling population. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service confirmed this week that 14 wolf deaths were documented last year, making the most in any single year since the federal government began reintroducing the predators in New Mexico and Arizona in 1998. Many of the cases remain under investigation, but federal officials have acknowledged that illegal killings have been a problem over the years and will sadly likely continue as the wolf population grows and the animals disperse into other areas of the Southwest. Part of the mission of the multi-agency team that oversees recovery will be to keep track of the wolves this year and notify the public as they move into previously uninhabited areas, said Fish and Wildlife Service spokesman John Bradley. The federal agency, which coordinates with other federal departments, state game officials in Arizona, and the White Mountain Apache Tribe in Arizona, also says it's on track to release an update recovery plan for the species later this year. Accused in federal court of dragging its feet for decades, the Fish and Wildlife Service is now under a court order to get it done this year. But officials say they have made no decisions about whether the plan will involve wolf releases in neighboring Colorado or Utah. New Mexico already is entangled in a legal fight over the lease of wolves within its boundaries. The state has cited concerns about the direction of the reintroduction program and the failure of the federal agency to revamp the outdated recovery plan. Environmentalists have been pushing for years for the release of more captive-bred wolves to bolster the population and address genetic issues. Ranchers throughout the region have been vocal opponents, saying wolves are threatening their livelihood through the killing of livestock and have compromised public safety in rural communities. A review of the program's monthly report shows investigators in 2016 confirmed more than two dozen livestock kills by wolves in western New Mexico and eastern Arizona. There were also a few nuisance reports filed last year. There are currently about 100 wolves in the wild in New Mexico and Arizona. And environmentalists say that's not enough to ensure the species' survival. While many of last year's cases are still under investigation, Michael Robinson with the Center for Biological Diversity called the illegal shooting of wolves an unacceptable ongoing loss to the population. He also said the greatest threat continues to be the freeze on wolf releases and voiced concerns about any potential federal legislation that would call for limiting or removing protection for the wolves. Our second piece, new questions about wolves on Royal Isle as the study begins its 59th year. This is from the Michigan Radio and the Environment Report by Rebecca Williams on January 3rd. The winter study of wolves and moose on Isle Royal is heading into its 59th year. The wolf-moose study is the longest-running study of any predator and its prey in the world. Scientists from Michigan Tech spend several weeks on the island in the middle of the winter every year. They'll be heading back out there pretty soon. At one point in 1980, there were 50 wolves on the island. Last year, the researchers found that there were just two wolves left, and they're in rough shape. These wolves are father and daughter and are also half-siblings because they share the same mother. Rolf Peterson is a research professor at Michigan Tech who's been studying at the wolves and moose on Isle Royal, for 47 years. He says when he returned to the island this summer, those two wolves seemed to be surviving. As of last September, we had a visitor report of two wolves howling that seemed pretty reliable, and I had them on camera in June on a remote camera, he says. No reproduction this year, and that's to be expected given their close relationship. Meanwhile, life is very good for the moose on the Isle. Last winter, the team estimated the moose population at 1,300. They're not dying, that's for sure. They're reproducing very well. Lots of calves and lots of twins, says Mr. Peterson. He says he expects there could be 1,500 to 1,600 moose on the island soon. So how long will it take before there are too many moose and they run out of food? It'll creep up on everybody, including the moose. The moose, as they age, will become more vulnerable to starvation and malnutrition, he said. Last month, the National Park Service put out a proposal to bring new wolves to the island, and there are a few different ways they may do this. The plan they prefer is to introduce 20 to 30 wolves over a 3 to 5 year period, which is actually a pretty aggressive intervention, says Peterson, and it recognizes and tries to remedy the two primary issues, being inbreeding in wolves and lack of predation. So by putting a large number of wolves on the island, they hope to maximize genetic diversity right at the outset and also get the number of wolves high enough so their predation will have some impact on the moose population. He says that plan should work just fine, although he says it's a little risky and it's experimental, but it's worth a try, and it does put a lot of wolves on the ground, and they will eat or die. But nobody really has done it that way before. Peterson said it could be a few years before any new wolves are introduced to Isle Royal. He says those new wolves will become part of the study. We do know what happens when their predators are gone. So their predator-prey system that's been the subject of the study for so long won't be just instantly reestablished. But the adjustment, it would be a learning experience for everybody, I guess, he says. So we'll see what happens, and hopefully the wolves are reintroduced on Isle Royal. Our third piece comes from the Conway Daily Sun in Chatham, New Hampshire, from January 3rd. 27 wolf dogs from the New England Wolf Advocacy Rescue Center were packed up Christmas Eve for a cross-country journey to the rescue center's parent company, the Lockwood Animal Rescue Center in Fraser Park, California. The animals completed their journey on Wednesday. Dr. Lauren Linder, president of the Lockwood Animal Rescue Center, talked with the Sun recently about why and when the move was made. The wolf dogs arrived in California about 3 a.m. Pacific time on December 28th. All 27 animals are safe and sound, said Linder. I'm thrilled with that. The New England Wolf Advocacy Rescue Center, under the auspices of LARC, took over the Loki Clan Wolf Refuge in Chatham in late 2013. It also took wolf dogs from the Dancing Brook Rescue in Alexandria, among other places. Linder explained that the Chatham Center had 38 animals to begin with and that 11 will remain there. In terms of new work, as Loki Wolf Refuge was now called, and LARC, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which regulates wolf dog sanctuaries, considers them to be two branches of the same facilities, she said. The animals are kind of coming to a nice retirement home in sunny Southern California, said Linder. Because we are in the mountains, they still get the snow in the winter. Wolves love the snow. The animals remaining in Chatham will be cared for by Mr. Stanley McDonald, a military veteran who worked for years for LARC and intermittently for Newark. He also is an animal control officer for Stowe, Maine. They will get their medical care from Freiburg-based veterinarian Monique Kramer. The plan is to move the older animals to LARC, was in the works for a long time. Many of the wolf dogs, according to Linder, are between the ages of 14 and 16 years of age and are arthritic. Others were relocated because they were pack mates of the elder animals. In addition, at Lockwood Animal Rescue Center, the staff can easily and readily focus on just the animals, not have to worry about plowing and sanding roads, frozen water, and that kind of thing, said Linder. The staff at Newark really had their hands full on the East Coast, and we felt that lowering the numbers of animals would be better for them and for the animals. The original plan was for Linder, her husband Matt Simmons, who serves as LARC's operational director, and a number of staff members to be in Chatham by December 23rd. But they arrived later than anticipated, so they had to begin moving the animals on December 24th. It takes quite a while to round up 27 animals, and unfortunately it went into the night, said Linder, adding that a truck carrying equipment left at around 10 p.m., but the animals left soon after that. The truck and trailers with the wolves still left much later than we wanted to. It was dark by the time we left. The best time to travel across the country is during a holiday because there is less traffic on the roads, believe it or not, Linder said, and that worked out fairly well. You want these wolves not to stay in those crates any longer than necessary, she said. The animals were moved in tiger crates, 5 foot by 4 foot by 3.5 feet, fabricated to the U.S. Department of Agriculture requirements. The animals had straw, shavings, and fresh water at every stop. The trailer was climate controlled and had windows. We would never and could never skimp on the wolves' care, safety, and comfort, said Linder. The Carroll County Sheriff's Office on Christmas Eve received calls from people concerned that wolves would be liquidated during the move. Linder said nothing like that would ever happen. She said the animals will be cared for under the auspices of USDA requirements and guidelines. For the last 3.5 years, we've been caring for these animals. We are never going to stop, said Linder. We didn't drive halfway all the way across the country to hurt animals. U.S. Public Affairs Specialist Tanya Espinosa said facilities like Lockwood must maintain records of animal dispositions and acquisitions. While we conduct inspections without which are unannounced, we look not only at the actual animals, but also at the paperwork. Well-wishers may adopt a wolf dog by providing monetary donation for its care. Adopters will receive pictures, live videos, and updates of their animals. We invite anyone who cares for these animals to follow up with us and absolutely follow their care as we continue to provide for them for the rest of our lives, said Linder. Well, that's the news for the night. I hope you enjoyed it. Good evening, and we'll talk to you later. And now it's time for Vet Tech Is In. Hello, Krista.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Krista Ward, and the Vet Tech Is In. The first question of the night is, what is Giardia in dogs? Giardia refers to an intestinal infection that is caused by the protozoan parasite Giardia, which is most common intestinal parasite that is found in humans. Dogs develop the infection by ingesting infectious offspring, also known as cysts, that are shed in another animal species. The contamination can be from direct or indirect contact with the infected cyst. The organisms, once ingested, make their way into the intestine, often causing diarrhea. The treatment is typically performed on an outpatient basis with a good prognosis. The symptoms of Giardia are more visible in younger animals than in older animals and can either be sudden, temporary, non-continuous, or ongoing in nature. In some cases, dogs will exhibit diarrhea that is soft, frothy, greasy, and with a strong, awful odor or excessive mucus. One of the most common causes of the parasitic infection is the ingestion of infected fecal material as the cysts are shed in animal feces. The most common cause of transmission is actually waterborne, as the parasite prefers the cool and wet environment. Up to 50% of young puppies will develop this intestinal infection, and up to 100% of dogs housed in kennels will develop it due to the massive exposure in closely shared living spaces. What is coccidia? Coccidiosis is a parasitic type of infection caused by the coccidium that most commonly causes watery, mucus-based diarrhea in dogs. If it is not treated, over time it can cause damage to the lining of the dog's intestinal tract. With treatment, the prognosis is good. You may notice that the dog has watery, mucus-like diarrhea as the condition progresses. Bloody diarrhea and an inability to withhold it will begin to show. The dog may also be in a weakened state. Stress, as from moving, travel, and weather changes, and being in an environment with other infected animals, are the most common causes of this parasitic infection to develop. It is spread through the fecal material and is most commonly found in puppies that have contracted the parasite from an adult dog species. The coccidiosis infection is of particular danger for young dogs since their immune systems are still underdeveloped. A fecal examination is the most common method of diagnosis for this infection. The coccidiosis parasite will be readily visible under a microscope. The next question is, what are roundworms? Roundworms are parasites that live freely in the intestine, feeding off of partially digested intestinal contents. Their name is derived from their tubular or round type shape. How did my dog get roundworms? Infected dogs shed the microscopic roundworm eggs in their feces. Other dogs may become infected by sniffing or licking infected feces. Roundworm eggs can also be spread by other animals such as rodents, earthworms, roaches, and birds. In these animals, the roundworms are merely transported and do not mature into adults. If a dog eats this peritonic host, the roundworm is liberated and completes its maturation. In the dog, the roundworm undergoes a complicated life cycle before mature roundworms are found in the intestinal tract. This involves several stages and includes migration through various bodily tissues. Roundworm larvae can migrate and incise through the host body. This is important in the female dog because these incised larvae will start to develop during pregnancy and ultimately cross the placenta into an unborn puppy. Thus, puppies can be born with roundworms and can pass fertile eggs from adult worms in their stools by the time they are approximately 11 days old. Roundworm larvae may also enter the mother's mammary glands and be transmitted through the milk. In puppies, clinical signs such as stunted growth, pot belly, and recurrent diarrhea are a good indication of the roundworm infection. Definitive diagnosis is made by microscopic examination of the dog species. If you are concerned about parasitic infestation in your furry friend, please contact your veterinarian immediately for proper tests and treatment. And as always, thank you for listening to The Vet Tech Is In.
Well, everybody, the clock on my iPhone tells me we've reached that point in the show when it's time for us to Ask Cat.
The first question is, my wolf dog digs constantly. What can I do? This is a good wolf dog question. You've got a couple of options as well as a great big old containment warning here. First off, make absolute sure that you have extremely good dig guards in place. I would suggest 6-foot wide heavy duty chain link. Don't use welded wire because it rots out and it's far too easy to pull apart unless you use it as a concrete strengthener. Basically, that means that you're going to lay out your welded wire and then pour and spread out concrete pads on top of it for added extra strength in your concrete dig guards. Or you can lay down chain link as your dig guards and then cover the chain link with about a foot or so of soil, and then perhaps a bunch of straw or shavings. That always helps. If your dig guards are great, not just adequate, but great, then how about this? Build a sandbox. Hide bones and treats and toys in the sandbox, and then encourage your wolf dog to dig in his box. Now, I can't guarantee that this is going to solve the problem, but it may redirect to a solution that you can control. Wolf dogs are notorious diggers, and if you must control their ability to dig, you're going to have to build a floor in which they will be unable to dig. But a sandbox might help give them some fun, easily controllable outlet for their digging penchant. And the second question is, my wolf dog howls at night, and my neighbors are getting upset. What can I do? I'm going to be honest with you, this is a tricky one. There are some training options, but they are not a quick fix. Consider contacting a trainer, and you're probably going to have to figure out the schedule of howling. For instance, does it start the same time each night? Is there an environmental cause? Is there something going on that you're not aware of? This might take a little while to figure out, but those are important issues that you've got to find out before you can correct the problem. Crate training is probably your best option. If you can crate train your wolf dog and bring them in to sleep with you, this will definitely help alleviate the neighbor's complaints. Make sure that you exercise your wolf dog very well before you tuck in for the night. Some woofers are going to feel more comfortable in their crates if they can see you. That is, if you choose to crate train them and bring them inside. There are gadgets that you can get. I haven't had a whole lot of success with them myself. I tried an ultrasonic kennel unit, but it just doesn't work very well outdoors, since it was, even though it said it was an outdoor kennel unit, it was only a sound, and every time they bark or howl or make a noise that the unit recognizes, it sends out an ultrasonic beep. This might be an option. It has helped with a lot of dogs. Bark collars are extremely problematical, and honestly, I don't recommend them. There is just way too much that can go wrong. I would check out a behaviorist first thing before your neighbors get too angry and frustrated, and let your neighbors know that you're trying to fix the issue. I hope that this was helpful. If you have a question for Ask Cat, please drop me a line at askcat@wolfdogradio.com. And now it's time for everyone's favorite Ragin' Cajun, Jerry Mills.
Hi, I'm Jerry, and this is the Wolf Tejas Den. Well, tonight I'm going to kind of briefly try to explain the endocrine system as it relates to wolves and how it attributes to making them different than dogs. Well, the endocrine system is the collection of glands in an organism that secretes hormones directly into the circulatory system to be carried towards distant target organs. The phenomenon of biochemical processes serving to regulate distant tissues by means of secretion directly into the circulatory system is called endocrine signaling. The major endocrine glands include the pineal gland, the pituitary gland, pancreas, ovaries, testes, thyroid, parathyroid, and the adrenal glands. The endocrine system is an informational signal system like the nervous system, yet its effects and mechanisms are different. The endocrine system's effects are slow to initiate and prolonged in their response, lasting from a few hours to a few weeks. The endocrine system is important. It regulates tissue function, mood, metabolism, growth, development, sexual function, and reproductive process. It influences nearly all cells, organs, and the function of the body. They control absorption of nutrients, growth and development, energy, metabolism, stress, and injury responses, reproduction, lactation, and even water and electrolyte balance. Well, you know, dogs have an endocrine system, and it takes on a whole new reaction in wolves. Their reactivity levels to each other, as well as outside stimulus, is greatly heightened. Living in the wild to hunt and survive, the drive and determination with their metabolism accelerated. Growth as pups is all due to their endocrine system. Wolves' period of hormonal withdrawal is much longer and can be affected by their environment. The endocrine system regulates this. Hormonal withdrawal is when the pituitary, thyroid, adrenal glands, and the gonads are all at the same level. No hormone is stronger or more prominent than the other. Kind of flatlines. Well, wolves of the pack depend heavily on hormonal withdrawal. The pack's hierarchy depends on it, especially at breed season when the dominant pair or pack leaders breed exclusively. The other females lapse into hormonal withdrawal. Well, the endocrine system also plays a huge role in how many pups are produced, depending on the years of feast or famine, as well as many females, as how many females in the pack will breed on any given year. the endocrine system in wolves, though dogs have the exact same system, plays a much more critical role in their survival as a wild canid. Though brief, as I'm no scientist, I hope this brings a better understanding to the role this chemical injection system, called the endocrine system, plays in the lives of dogs and their wild counterparts. It's really quite fascinating and amazing how it all works. Well, that's it for tonight from the Wolf Tejas Den.
Purple Ark Rescue and Sanctuary is a private refuge for abused dogs. For the last 20 years, Purple Ark Rescue and Sanctuary has been operated from the home of Camille Christie Barber and her husband Joe. Joe works a long week at his job, and Camille stays home to care for the fur darlings. Purple Ark currently cares for and supports 14 dogs, 4 cats, and 1 possum who calls their porch home. Camille and Joe are magnets for injured and or needy animals who are fortunate enough to find their way to Purple Ark. Purple Ark recently took in a bait dog from Egypt. This poor animal had no back legs and was incontinent. They named him Bizou. That's spelled B-I-S-O-U, and it means kiss in French. The doctors in Egypt weren't sure if Bizou's incontinence would ever resolve itself. Expenses for Bizou's upkeep and recovery have doubled Purple Ark's expenditures. Did you know that Bizou has his own Facebook page? If you would like to follow his recovery and his journey, please go to www.facebook.com/blessedbisou. That's spelled B-I-S-O-U. Purple Ark Rescue also has its very own Facebook page, but Camille admits to spending more time with the animals than doing updates of late. She promises to be better about that. While not a 501c3, Purple Ark welcomes and appreciates donations of any amount or kind. Please support Purple Ark Rescue and Sanctuary at www.facebook.com/Purple Ark Rescue. On a personal note, on behalf of Wolfdog Radio, we would like to thank Purple Ark Rescue and Sanctuary, and especially Camille, for all you do. Fellow listeners, please support this noble cause.
Hey, y'all. This is Jerry Emmelman, and you're listening to Wolf Dog Radio. Enjoy the show.
I certainly hope everyone enjoyed this show as much as I did. Mrs. Wild amazes us constantly with her passion, her energy, and her dedication. Please be sure to visit wolfdogradio.com for all links to all of Nicole's sites to view her books, check out her seminar schedule for 2017, and her award-winning photographic art. Thank you again, Ms. Wild, for appearing on our show. And to all of you listeners who participated in the Wild giveaway, check our Facebook page on Saturday to see if you are one of the lucky winners. Don't forget that Ms. Wild is offering a 10% discount to Wolf Dog Radio listeners by using discount code BF0911. Again, that is BF0911 when ordering her Wolf Dog books and DVDs at her website, NicoleWild.com. Thank you, Nicole. Our next show will be January 20th, 2017, and will be a Wolf Dog Radio Community Spotlight featuring Sarah Mobahedy and Storm. In case a lot of you didn't know, Storm suffered from subluxation of the sacrum. This will be a very interesting show. Please join us. We at Wolf Dog Radio want to remind our listeners to please always remember to be cautious with your precious fur babies out in any public setting. The public fears what they do not understand. If you are going to put your animal in a position to be around the general population at any time, please set boundaries for your animal and the people around that animal. have safety checklists to follow. Always be responsible, because our best friends are not always viewed in a positive light. Keep your babies protected. Their lives may depend on it.
As we face 2017, we at Wolf Dog Radio wish all of our gentle listeners a happy new year. This last year has brought with it loss and sadness, new fears, old fears, and uncertainty about tomorrow. However, at Wolf Dog Radio, we saw a spark emerge, an awareness among many of us that not only do we have a voice, but we have history and unity behind us, bracing us should we choose to accept it. It is a deep responsibility to stand up and fight for what is right when there is so much pressure to give in and to give up. But we are not alone. Those of you who are new to the Wolf Dog community, we invite you to reach out to those who've been here for decades. Those of us who have been around since God was a little child, we invite you to reach out to those of us who are young in this battle. We need to stand together. We have advocates. We are not powerless. We have a voice, and we must learn to use it for the good and protection of all. I'd like to leave you with this thought. If you can't rescue, foster. If you can't foster, sponsor. If you can't sponsor, volunteer. If you can't volunteer, donate. And if you can't donate, educate and advocate. You can do something big or you can do something small, but whatever you do, it's better than nothing at all. So let's go be heroes. If you have any questions about the show, please email us at questions@wolfdogradio.com and come check out our website at www.wolfdogradio.com for more information. And always remember, life is short. Hug your babies. Good night and be blessed.